Welcome to Lunchtime Classics, broadcast live from our performance studio in downtown Louisville. Now, here's your host, Carol Larson.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon, and welcome to this live performance here at Lunchtime Classics in our performance studio here at 619 South 4th Street. And I'm really happy to announce today who our performer is. This is a really nice treat for me. We have Rob Turner here. He's going to be performing a lot of early music on the Baroque flute. And we're going to be talking to him in about 30 minutes, find out all about the Baroque flute and how that came about and the differences between that flute and the current flute that we all know and love today. So, Rob, welcome. Thank you for being here. And I'm going to turn it right over to you and have you start your first piece, which is by Michel Delabarre.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Rob. That was the Suite in D Major by Michel de la Barre, and wonderful music there. Tell us about the composer a little bit.
Michel de la Barre was the most famous flute player at the very beginning of the 18th century in France. It's interesting, in the introduction to that volume, which is the first music that was published for Baroque flute.
Is that right?
The very first.
Very interesting.
So the first note of that piece is the first note for Baroque flute.
History in the making.
Yes. And in the introduction, he says that he's introduced some new notes, and there are just some technical things about the pieces that he wasn't going to publish, but people are circulating them in manuscripts that have errors, so he decided he'd better publish them. Mm-hmm. And he says that if you have any questions that I haven't answered in my notes, come by my house and I'll give you a free lesson.
Well,
I mean, imagine Jimmy Galway saying that today.
Of course.
I mean, that's really... would be the closest equivalent.
I noticed you didn't say, email me your question and I'll answer it.
No. Carry a pigeon, maybe.
Well, what's the next piece we're going to hear?
The next couple of pieces are Air de Coeur. This is the first repertoire for the flute. De la Barre was really breaking new ground in writing purely instrumental music. The first generation of Baroque flute players in the late 17th century in France were singers. Hmm. And they played the repertoire that they sang, little songs, love songs, often pastoral songs. Actually, all three of the pieces that I'm going to play next have lots of pastoral references. The first is by Jean-Baptiste Bousset, who was the son of a very famous composer of Air de Coeur. And the text is, Pourquoi du rossignol? Why, sweet nightingales, do you wake me up before dawn? What is it? Avant l'aurore, before the aurora. Why do you wake me up so early in this somber place? The second, Henri Desmarais, was a composer who was very popular at court but never managed to get a position at court. And it's called Lieu Charmant, Charming Place, Tranquil Retreats. And then I'll introduce the third one just before I play. So first, Pourquoi du Rossignol, and then Lieu Charmant.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is Rob Turner performing here on the Baroque flute.
Thank you.
you. Thank you. The last of the three air de coeur that I'm going to play for you is a particular kind called a brunette. And it's so called because the subject of the very first one, as luck would have it, was a brunette. This one is called L'autre jour ma Chloris, the other day my Chloris, for whom my heart sighs, and there's a wonderful sighing motif that goes with those words, with a sweet sigh told me that she would love me forever. The second verse starts, the day she left, she told me she would love me forever. And I like the third verse in this source doesn't have a text, but I like to think from the character of it that she's back. And that's one of the things about these pieces, is that they are very text-driven, even though they're instrumental music. And they have the words printed under most of the musical lines. What use are words to someone who's playing a solo flute? Well, they're a guide to the shaping of the phrase. Today, if we played, say, Happy Birthday, and changed the phrasing, everyone would know it, because even subconsciously, you're probably kind of humming the words along in your mind. So you'd know if someone took a breath in the middle of a word or something like that. Also, these are from a collection by Jacques Hotteterre, who was from one of the great families of musicians at court. There were several. They are credited with having developed the oboe and possibly the flute. And in another of his publications, Hotteterre says that it's very important to learn to play in lots of keys, because you're going to be accompanying singers and you need to be able to transpose into any key, and he means it, any key. So this is set in D major, but in order to give you a sense of the flavor of different keys, because they do have different character, much more so than with modern instruments that are have much more homogeneity as a goal. So I'll play the first in D major, the second verse in B flat, and the third verse in E, which is a nice bright key.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. That's very, very unsubtle, the difference in the keys there, from D to B flat to E. E is so bright. And it's different to play on that. We were talking before, earlier this morning, about the Baroque flute. And before we get into that, how did you get involved in flute playing? I mean, were you in fourth grade and someone said, here, you're going to play flute in the band? Or how did that work out?
Well, I didn't play flute until I started playing recorder in high school. I had a good friend whose older brother came back from the Mozarteum as a clarinet player with some recorders. And he was older, so I mean, he was 19.
You thought this is great.
But I had been just fascinated by Baroque music since I was a toddler, and was a brass player in high school and was playing.
A brass player?
Playing in brass ensembles.
Well, that's quite a difference
playing
from
a lot
the flute.
Playing a lot of Renaissance and Baroque music
in
brass ensembles.
Okay.
So became more and more interested in what it sounded like on the instruments that were in use when it was written.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. And tell us about the Baroque flute. We were discussing the differences, and of course, the live audience can see how beautiful. You show them this flute. It's beautiful. The listening audience can see that. It's not one of the silver or gold flutes that you normally see played in an orchestra, but rather this Baroque flute is made of?
Well, this one actually is a fake ivory, what the Germans would call Kunstelfenbein, polyester.
Still looks good.
But there were a lot of ivory instruments in the period. One of the advantages of this is that if I'm playing other things for weeks and need to get back to this quickly, it doesn't suffer from getting played too much when it hasn't been played in a while.
Gotcha. And it's interesting, tell us about the mouthpiece. I don't know if you can see it in the audience. It's just a hole there. Now, the flute has a hole, but there's a mouth rest in a regular flute, and you don't have that here.
Right. Yeah, this is the direct ancestor of the modern flute. The head joint, however, the wall of the head joint is much thicker than a modern flute. So the little chimney that's formed by putting the lip plate onto the modern flute is accomplished just by drilling through the wall of the head joint. This is a typical first-generation French Baroque flute. The Baroque flute developed from an earlier Renaissance-style instrument that was a mouth hole, six finger holes, and essentially cylindrical bore. Could play beautifully in a few of the Renaissance modes, but was not nearly as versatile as this instrument, and didn't play so well in the first octave, and this has a relatively strong first octave. The notes are produced using the six finger holes, and there's actually a seventh finger hole underneath the key. That key is the same as on a modern flute. A modern flutist who wants to play a G sharp reaches right into the same place, hits that key, and gets their D sharp. Then the sharps and flats are produced by cross fingering, where you play, if you wanted to play an A flat, you'd play an A, and then you'd add fingers farther down the body of the instrument to pull it down to the pitch that you want.
And we were talking about the difficulties in performing with that instrument and a piano, for example, the tuning.
Yeah, well, when you play with a keyboard instrument, of course, keyboard instruments in period tunings are not in equal temperament.
Right.
And these instruments are happiest not playing in an equal temperament. And so you can choose. But depending on the context, you may want an A flat or a G sharp, and it just happens that the music, the basis for our theory today that allows us to say, okay, in this place I write an A flat rather than a G sharp.
A G sharp. Right.
Let the composer choose that then, and so you simply play what you see. If it says A flat, you play A flat. If it says G sharp, you play G sharp. It's just that they're different.
Well, the story of tuning and just talking about the different tunings that are around temperaments, that's just a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
Google it on the web
and you'll have
an eyeful. Well, I want to stop talking. I'll get more back to this beautiful music. Would you like to introduce your next piece?
Sure. This is a piece by a member of another of the great musical families at the French court. Pierre Philidor was at least the third generation, if not the fourth generation, at court. His grandfather and great uncle participated in the development of the oboe with members of the Audetaire family. And that's actually documented by Michel de Lavar.
Oh, wow. This is a great history lesson.
It all ties together. This is from a set of suites for flute and bass and two flutes without bass. All of these pieces that I've played so far have bass lines, but they all come from publications where the composer says you can also play these unaccompanied. This is in four movements. The first is marked très lentement, very slowly. An allemande, which is it's a dance movement. It's a kind of dance that was no longer actually being danced by that time, but it's very common as a form in 18th century suites. A sarabande, which is a dance that actually came from Central America and was outlawed in Europe when it first came into Europe. And finally, a gigue. Oh, one thing I should also say, Philidor is the only source he marks a kind of vibrato. He has a special symbol for it in the music. Mm. It's a kind of vibrato that you really would have a hard time doing on a modern flute with all of the key work. You play a note, and then you touch the edge of one of the holes farther down the instrument, and it's like a very, very shallow trill. It's called flattement, flattening, and that's exactly what it does.
Very interesting.
A number of treatises talk about it, but he's the only one who says right here, this note. So, the Cinquième Suite in E by Pierre Philidor.
Thank you.
And that was Rob Turner on the Baroque flute. Lovely music there. And now what you got for us here?
This is yet another suite. This one's in G minor by Joseph Baudin de Boismortier. Boismortier was a very interesting character. He was a real pioneer. He was very involved with fusing Italian style music, which was very distinct from French, with French music. Especially in the prelude to this, you can hear a lot of the kind of swooping, lots and lots of fast notes, ornaments that are characteristically Italian. Boismortier also was very inventive in the combinations of instruments. He published the first pieces, the set of six concertos. The first pieces that were called concertos in France were published by Boismortier. They were concertos for five flutes unaccompanied.
A lot of flutes.
It's a wonderful sonority. And he was one of the first composers to do better than just make a living without a patron. He published over 100 opus numbers. He was known to be prolific at the time. Some people were kind of jealous of that and were critical of it. His reply was, "I'm making money."
Right, that's exactly right. So he actually got paid.
Yeah.
And now I'm noticing here that you're switching flutes.
I'm switching flutes. This is a slightly later style of flute. The first one was based on a flute of Chevalier from around 1700. This is a flute after Stainsby Jr., an English maker. This is from about the mid-1730s, and it's a four-piece instrument rather than a three-piece instrument. And this is typical of, from about 1720 until into the 19th century, flutes were generally made in four pieces. Mm-hmm. Then in the 19th century, or very late 18th century, they started to revert to a kind of three-piece configuration. That's what's still used today.
Okay. Great. So this piece is called?
This is the troisième suite, the third suite in G minor, from Opus 35.
Rob Turner on the Baroque flute here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rob. We're going to go to some German music now, I see, by Johann Sebastian Bach. Yes. And do you want to talk about this piece a little bit?
Yeah. This is a transcription of the G major cello suite of Bach. Years ago, was listening to a cellist friend practice it and realized that I was fingering along and that with actually pretty little adaptation, it will fit the baroque flute. This is a typical baroque suite, prelude, allemande, courante, sarabande, two minuets, and a gigue. Kind of what gets taught in music history classes as the standard form of the Baroque instrumental suite.
And some of the music, where did you actually find the French music? Is it easy to find? You have to go to France to get it? Or?
Well, it's much easier to find now. Many years ago when I started playing it, it was definitely Xeroxes that were passed around, right. And it was the old floppy, smelly gray Xeroxes, mm-hmm. And occasionally printouts from microfilms and things like that. Today, there are actually quite a lot of publications of facsimiles with the permission of the libraries where a particular print of pieces.
Right. It would be fun to go to Europe and go into some church basement and find some wonderful music like this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, years ago I was doing some work at the Library of Congress and got to go through the stacks, and every once in a while you just see something on one of the shelves
that would
and
be
catch
fantastic.
Your eye.
Get great. Okay, well, without further ado, we're going to hear this suite by Johann Sebastian Bach.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob Turner, for coming today to the Lunchtime Classics live concert here in our performance studio at 619 South 4th Street. Ladies and gentlemen, those here, thank you so much. And we enjoyed the music and the history lesson. The music history lesson was great. Thank you all for coming. Good afternoon.